This podcast may contain adult language and situations, graphic, gory details, and other not so nice things. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm Lacey.
And I'm Ashley, and this is United States of Murder. This week, we're in West Virginia discussing a murder amongst family members.
Then we'll talk about a murder amongst friends. So buckle up and join us on this dark and twisted ride through the Mountain State.
Okay. I have no thrilling opening this week because there are no words.
Okay.
For this case, it's bananas.
I'll take your word for it.
And I will try not to laugh because this murder is not funny.
Right.
But this case is.
Hmm.
So diving in. On January 30th, 1983, 35-year-old James Duncan of Leyland, West Virginia, was reported missing by his wife, Cleo. His truck was found over an embankment by a river. It appeared to be abandoned. Authorities drug the river to see if he was possibly thrown into it, but they find nothing. Rumors start running wild, but it wouldn't be long before James' body was found. The next evening, police are driving across Wiegand's Bridge while out on patrol, and they come upon a car stopped in the middle of the bridge, which is unusual.
Mm-hmm.
They see an object being flung out of the car, which is strange. The car that was throwing whatever it was sees the cop's headlights and hauls ass out of there.
Oh, boy.
Then they see someone run off into the woods. Like someone was clearly left behind when the car took off and that person ran into the woods. So they go after the guy in the woods.
Oh, the car had a passenger and a driver. Got it.
Yes.
Okay.
So there were multiple people in the car. They see the headlights. Car speeds away.
I'd be so mad.
Somebody like darts out. So the cops, you know, they're like, we got to go after the person in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
But what did they throw out? So they're like flashlights, looking all around the bridge to see if they can see anything. And they see a foot. Yes.
I thought you were going to say a murder weapon.
No.
A foot?
A foot. The foot of James Duncan. He was a dangling upside down from this bridge, visibly dead. His chest was cut open, and there was nothing in there, like in his chest. Like it looked like he'd almost been disemboweled. And his foot is tangled in the substructure of the bridge, and he's hanging like a bat.
Oh my gosh.
Like, how would you get somebody down from that? What do you do?
I have no idea.
Do you like unwedge their foot and somebody's below them, like a cartoon fire truck with the big thing pulled tight, like a tarp?
I would think they'd need a lift. But wait, they'd have to be able to get under it.
Yeah.
Something that telephone pole people need, I would guess.
I don't know. Yeah. So clearly he didn't commit suicide.
No.
You can't do this by yourself. So the medical examiner says he wasn't completely disemboweled, but his heart and lungs were missing. And they found a .22 slug in there. He had died from a gunshot wound, but after his death, someone had cut him open and removed his organs. James Duncan was a rough man, like very rough. He liked to drink and hang out at the tavern in Mount Hope, which was a nearby town, and he was physically and mentally abusive towards his wife and kids. He and Cleo had one infant daughter together, and he was stepdad to her three sons. Jerry, Joey, and Bobby. The oldest was about 17.
Hmm.
Like, what a nightmare. Like, your stepdad is the typical redneck drunk who beats his wife and kids in all the movies. He's Billy Bob Thornton in every movie he plays. Besides Bad Santa.
Oh, yeah, I was about to say.
So there's probably a long list of people who know this guy's an asshole and aren't surprised by this news. Like, he had it coming, probably. It was just a matter of time.
Yeah.
So on the night of January 29th, James had been out drinking, gets drunk, gets home around 1 a.m., wakes up his wife to make him some food. So she put something in the microwave for him, but it's not hot enough. He slaps it off the table across the room. She runs outside, screaming, trying to get away. He drags her back inside. Here he notices that it's cold and the fire has gone out, so he loses his mind over that. She makes him something else to eat, not good enough. A repeat of earlier happens. He throws the shitty food, chases her outside, drags her back in. He's beating her. At this point, 17-year-old son wakes up and attempts to intervene.
Ugh.
Like, this is his mom. He's watching get the hell beat out of her. Same thing happens to him. He goes after the stepson. He runs outside into the woods, and eventually they calm down and agree to talk. So he comes back inside, and Stepdaddy Dickhead has already woke up the other two little boys and proceeds to yell at all of them about the fire being out. It's 2 a.m. He's drunk. These babies were asleep. Their mother's bleeding, swollen face. There's shit running down the wall where he slapped food across. And he is holding a knife, basically yelling at everybody and using this knife like a pointing stick.
Yeah.
And telling them all, it's your fault. You've made me do this. You're imbeciles. How could you let the fire? Just, he's an asshole.
Yeah.
At this point, he grabs a .22 rifle, the stepdad. So this was his mother-in-law's gun that she had left for her daughter for protection.
And how'd he get a hold of it?
Because it's just propped up against the wall.
Oh,
it's,
no.
They're in the hills of West Virginia.
Yeah.
Grandma lives next door.
Her mom.
Her mom.
Okay.
So this is a small town where all the families live near one another or on the same land. So Grandma, Dorothy's her name, she's close enough to hear all this bullshit going down.
I cannot imagine.
So she comes over. Mom's beaten. Kids are screaming and crying, running through the yard. It's 2 a.m. There's broken dishes, just some bullshit. So Grandma comes in and she's like, what the fuck is going on in here? James has the gun. She tries to wrestle it away from him, and a struggle ensues. James is shot. Dead. One shot through the heart. She freaks out, realizing that he is dead, and immediately tries to shoot herself.
Oh, my gosh.
Grandma takes the gun and is, like, pointing it at her head in front of all of these kids and her daughter, and she's going to off herself because she's like, I didn't mean to kill him. I can't live with myself. Oh, my God, what have I done?
Oh, my gosh.
So daughter says, I'll take the blame, Mom. I'll say it was self-defense. He had beaten me. There's all these witnesses. Like, I'm not – I'll tell him I did it. This doesn't sound like a Reba McEntire song.
Well, yeah, but it was self-defense. So.
Yes, but not against Grandma.
Correct, yeah.
You know. Anyway, so the whole family, kids, everybody, they're all sitting down and trying to figure out what's our story.
Oh, no.
So they decide to bury this man in the backyard.
Instead of
going to the cops or calling the cops, they're just going to bury him. They're going to bury him, and they send the two oldest boys, who are like 14 and 17, out back at 3 a.m. in January, West Virginia, to dig a hole to put their stepdad's body in.
That's going to be some hard ground.
Yes. So, they chunk stepdaddy in and cover him up. That's that. They're done.
Wow.
So, they're like, well, people are going to notice he's missing. So, they come up with a plan to drive his truck down a gravel road, run it off a hillside into the river below to make it look like an accident. So, off they go.
Mm-hmm.
Mom's following in the car. They're going to drive the truck off. They get to the hill. They push the truck, it rolls down and stops before it hits the river. So they're like, God damn it.
This is a terrible plan.
They're terrible criminals. They're like the Three Stooges.
Yeah, that's...
So now what? They can't drive the truck out of there.
Oh my gosh.
So they walk back to the car to try to regroup and figure out what now what are we going to do? And that's when they realize they have locked the keys in the car. So now they're stuck. Just so happens, somebody they know is driving by, and they send them to the house to get the extra set of keys and bring them back.
Mm.
Yes. So, Nobody asks any questions. The person that goes and gets the keys, not why are you on this dirt road at 4 a.m.? What? Why are the kids here? What the fuck's, why is your face bloody and swollen? Like, nobody's, don't ask, don't tell.
That must mean they were up to something bad, well, too. Or they're probably, like, let's just not talk about
it. Or they were with somebody else's spouse shouldn't have been. So, 30 minutes later, they return home. Later that day, Cleo files a missing persons report. This is when the police find the truck and drag the river. Mm. Cleo is upset. Even though he beat the shit out of her and her kids, she loved him and she misses him. And she tells her family, we need to have a proper burial for him.
Oh, gosh.
But they can't just take him to the funeral home, right?
No.
So they come up with a plan to now dig his body up and put it in the river. Since police are still looking for him and patrolling the area, they'll find his body. So we need to put him in the river, right? So now they have to dig it up.
There is
this too much is going
absolutely
on.
Absolutely not.
No, no. So the two oldest boys, again, go out, dig him up, drag him to the house.
And they've done nothing.
Not shit. They're just like, God damn, can we just, we need to go to school. Like, what are God, we doing? They have,
that's what they're dealing
yes,
with in high
yes,
school.
Yes, 17 and 14, yes. So they pull him into the yard, drag him up to the yard, and grandma's like, wait a minute. If they find his body with the bullet inside, they can trace that back. They're going to know that I shot him. So we got to get the bullet.
Oh, my gosh.
So now they drag this man's body in the house, put him on the kitchen table, and cut him open.
Or they could have put the gun in his truck in the first place and act like he took it.
That's a good idea, but no.
That's what they're...
So now he's on the kitchen table. All the kids around. Now there's an 8-month-old baby,
oh,
like a 10-year-old, 14, 17, you know. With their stepdad's body, and grandma has a knife and cuts him open and does a hillbilly autopsy.
Mm.
Looking for this .22 bullet.
And no one was puking. Oh,
no.
My gosh.
Spoiler alert, she doesn't find it.
What?
It's a .22. Those bullets can and have ricocheted off of bones. They scramble internal tissues, pierce organs that cause you to bleed out. So they travel. They're very light bullets.
So it could be anywhere in his body.
So if you get shot in the ass basically with a .22, it can bounce all through your body and end up in your brain. It's you don't want to get shot like even in like in the shoulder of a .22. It could end up in your groin. Like, they just bounce all... Anyways. So, they can't find the bullet.
Oh, my gosh.
So, they have filleted this man. Don't find a bullet. Say, fuck it. Load him in the back of his car. And now they're driving him to the bridge to be thrown into the river.
This is such a terrible idea because do they not realize that he couldn't have done this to himself?
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
If he had the gun with him, they could think, oh, suicide.
So grandma removes heart and lungs digging
Lord
for this bullet.
Have mercy.
And she doesn't put him back. They're just at the house. They just like, oh, fuck, we couldn't find him. Put him in the cart. We got to go. We're losing daylight. It's January. Daylight savings. It gets dark. We got to go.
I cannot.
So they drive to the bridge. And they are going to throw him in the river. But he's too heavy. So as they're trying to throw him in, his foot gets caught in the bridge, and he just swings down and is hanging upside down with his chest and stomach laid open.
My
I don't know if he has
God.
Clothes on or not, but his whole, yeah. So the son is sent down to the bottom of the bridge to try to dislodge this dead body who is dripping blood and been opened up, and the 17-year-old is like, trying to get his foot. And this is when they see the cop car.
Oh, so it's the whole family.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
So they see the headlights. Grandma and mom jump in the car. They drive off and leave the 17-year-old under the bridge with the dead body. They take off.
God.
That's when the cops pull up and he takes off into the woods. Just in... I told you there's
what
no word. If this
world?
Was a movie, you would be like, this is too much.
I'd be like, this is so dumb. No one would do this.
No one. This would have to be like a comedy.
Yeah, I'd be like, no one would do that.
Makes no sense. So this, grandma and mom, Dukes of Hazzard style, slide across the hood, sling gravel out of there, leave the son. He's in the woods. They get lost on the back roads of West Virginia for hours and hours before they finally make it home.
Oh, I know. Oh, my gosh.
I know. So the next day, they are pulled over by police as they were driving to turn themselves in. Grandma and mom are like, we can't fucking do this anymore. Like, we just got to turn ourselves in. Like, we there's nothing else.
Now that you have 1,000 more charges to add on top of it.
The cops are like, we saw this car last night at the bridge and found a dead body belonging to your husband. Get in the back of the fucking squad car. Yeah. Like, don't even ask. Anyways. So Cleo is charged with 2 counts, 1 unlawful discernment, and 1 count of murder. Mm. That's it. Like, there are so many, like you said, many more charges they could be charged with. Like,
desecrating a corpse.
Contributing to the delinquency of a minor. Yeah.
I mean,
destroying evidence.
I would think so, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So grandma, mom, and oldest son are arrested. They post a $50,000 bond and are released the same day to go home.
Wow.
Except for the 17-year-old, because he's a minor, so he has to go to a juvenile place.
Poor kid.
No shit. He didn't ask to be drunk. No, he didn't do anything. Yeah. I mean, he did something, but what are you going to do? Tell your grandma and mom
no? It's your grandma and your mom.
You're not going to tell them no. Just,
yeah, in that situation. Mm.
So Cleo goes to trial first. She is being charged with the discernment and murder. Police officer takes the stand and testifies to what she had told him, all the way down to digging up the body. Cleo testifies during the trial that her mom is the one who actually shot James, and her son said the same thing. So Cleo is acquitted of murder, but found guilty for the unlawful discernment of a human body. She was sentenced to 2 to 5 years. She is released on the same bond as before. So she leaves the same day and goes home. And she decides to appeal, arguing that the discernment implies prior burial in the sense of a decent burial. James did not have a proper burial. He was merely hidden in the ground.
Oh, my Lord.
Not buried before. So it couldn't fall under the subject of unlawful. They also argued that it's no different than the removal of a dead body from a serial killer's home or a plane crash, mudslide, or flood. Because you're digging up a body that didn't have a proper burial, so it's really the same thing.
Wow.
Yes. I'm like, you got 2 to 5 years. Shut the fuck up.
That's what I would think. Like,
and only 2 charges and 1 was dismissed. Walk away.
That's what I would think.
And you're out on the bond that you set before. You don't even have to put up any more money. Go home and take care of your fucking kids.
Right. Like, this is...
Yes. Mm. So they argue back that the hole James was placed in was dug specifically for him. So that was a grave.
It's semantics
of burial.
You're being petty. Like, drop it and shut go away.
You had 2 to 5 years. I mean, get out.
Yeah, it's
you don't even have probation. Walk away. You, yes.
Just because there wasn't, I don't know, a prayer, a closing prayer by a priest or something
either.
Doesn't.
No. So that doesn't work. The 2 to 5 years stays in place. She wasn't acquitted. So next is Mama Dorothy.
Lord.
She pleads guilty. Yes, I shot him. Yes, I told them to dig him up and attempted to dig the bullet out in front of kids. Yes, I did that. And I also helped try to throw him off a bridge and then left my grandson behind. But I didn't mean to kill him. But I am guilty of shooting him. So she is also sentenced to 2 to 5 years.
Wow.
The judge suspends the sentence and gives her credit for the 55 days that she served in county and tells her to go home.
They just
believe
it.
They're like, the judge probably knew James.
I was about to say.
He was probably like, this motherfucker has been in this court for domestic shit, probably hot checks. I'm just assuming. DWIs, you know, he was probably just a bad guy. You got to be a real asshole for the judge to be like, yo, you shot him and dug him up and then tried to dig a bullet out and threw him off a bridge. It's fine.
And
go home.
They're just, here's a freebie while you're at
go
it.
Go home.
We'll count these 55 days.
You can own a gun. Don't buy a gun, but you can go. Just go home.
What in the world?
Yes. Jerry, the 17-year-old son, stayed in trouble.
Are you serious?
He was arrested multiple times and ended up dying at the age of 43, which is so young. Grandma died at 92, and Cleo is now in her 70s and is alive and kicking somewhere.
Wow.
Yes. Which, I know. You can't do all of this to a child. And you know that was just, that one night was just the straw that broke the camel's back. You know that abuse, verbal, physical, mental, had been going on for years.
Yeah, I mean, and you're 17. Uh-huh. And then, ugh, that sucks.
Awful. So, that is my crazy story.
Holy cow.
No. I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, there was no opening. It sounds made up.
Yeah.
This sounds like if me and you and our friend Jason were trying to dispose of a body.
It's true. Like, it just be like, I would just turn myself
pick it
in.
Up. Jason, pick up the head.
And we got it. Tears.
Lacey, get the feet. We got to throw. Jason would be throwing up.
I'd be throwing up.
I'd be real mad because I'd be trying to smoke and I'd have blood all over me and it just, my cigarette would get wet. No. We'd have to go to Malvern somewhere and try to try.
I would turn myself in. Like,
Lacey's a snitch.
I can't do prison. Like, I'm going to do what it takes
to not do prison. They didn't have to. So.
Right. Fair enough.
Anyway.
I always say that. I'm like, don't involve me in your crimes. I can't do prison.
She's going to tell.
I don't want to be someone's bitch.
She will not go down with this ship. No.
I don't want to be somebody's bitch in prison.
Have you ever seen, this made me think, because this is exactly what this sounds like. There is a documentary. It came out a long time ago on Netflix. It's not on there anymore. But I looked it up and I think it's on Prime Video now. Anyways, it's called The Wild and Wonderful Whites of West Virginia.
Yes.
And this is who this made me think of.
Oh, I was like,
No, it's not them.
Yeah.
No. But it made me think that this is them. This is the kind of family.
I forgot about that.
No shade whatsoever to West Virginia.
No, we live in Arkansas.
We have no room to talk.
No.
But
that documentary could have been made about.
Oh, my God. If you haven't seen that, y'all need to watch that.
Yeah, that is something else. And, I don't even have
They're naming all their names. Let's just sue Bob.
Well, I mean.
They took her baby.
That was.
In the Taco Bell drive-thru, she's screaming.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyways.
Let's take a break.
Let's take a break.
I'm Lacey.
And I'm Ashley. And if you're listening to this, you've heard our podcast. But do you want more? Haven't got enough? Just kidding. It's not that type of show.
Okay, but what we will give you is Patreon exclusive episodes, early ad-free episodes, shout-outs, stickers, and more.
Besides our love.
Listeners can go to our page and pick the level they want to join by going to patreon.com/UnitedStatesOfMurder.
But in the meantime,
keep listening. Well, that was out of this world. I've never heard about that, but if there's not a documentary about that, there needs to be one. Holy crap.
And we're not laughing at the fact that this guy was murdered.
No.
But he sounds like an asshole.
Yeah. Not that he deserved murder.
They
took, well, she didn't mean, if she didn't mean to kill him, she wasn't taking it into her own hands. But you know what I mean.
Right.
It's just, well, my case has been covered by a couple of bigger podcasts, so you may have heard of it before, but some of our listeners maybe haven't heard it, and it's unlike a lot of others, so I'm doing it too. Skylar Annette Neese was born on February 10, 1996, and was the only child of Mary and David Neese. They resided in Star City, West Virginia, which is in the northern part of the state, pretty close to Pennsylvania. I forgot it was that far up there. I looked at a map. I'm like, what? Yeah, no, it's pretty up there. In the summer of 2012, Skylar was a bubbly 16-year-old honor student at University High School, which is near Morgantown, West Virginia. She had big dreams and wanted to become a criminal defense lawyer. She loved to read and had a pretty active social life. She also worked part-time at Wendy's with two of her close friends. Skylar was part of an inseparable trio that consisted of her and two other girls named Sheila Eddy and Rachel Schoaf. She had known Sheila since she was 8. So that's that's half her life. And she had met Rachel their freshman year of high school. So they're sophomores, so they've known her when you're in high school, that seems like a long time. But it was said Skylar was the emotional rock for Sheila and Rachel. Sheila was fun-loving, but Skylar was always trying to save her. As in, give her advice, tell her when she did something ridiculous, kind of mom her a little bit.
Right.
And so on. But Rachel was the opposite of Sheila. She came from a strict Catholic family, and she really looked up to Sheila's carefree attitude. So you kind of have the good girl, the rebel, and the mom in between trying to make it all work. Social media was a big part of their lives. I mean, it's 2012. So they would each post and share a lot on Facebook and on Twitter. In May of 2012, it was clear that there was a lot of tension going on with the girls. On May 31st, Skylar tweeted, "You're a two-faced bitch and obviously fucking stupid if you thought I wouldn't find out."
Holy shit.
Yeah, this is just tweets. Earlier that spring, she tweeted, "Too bad my friends are having lives without me." It kind of seemed, at least to Skylar, that Sheila and Rachel were becoming closer friends and kind of leaving her out. I was not a part of like a trio. When you're a teenager, you're jealous. There's so many emotions. Can you imagine like you have a best friend and then suddenly you have another best friend?
Girl, but there's friends that act like that now.
That's true.
Don't even say.
But I feel like when there's three, there's always, I don't know.
I was never that girl that was like, I had a group of girlfriends in high school.
Yeah.
But there were.
Well, I had a group of.
Like four of us.
I had a group of several close friends, but I only had one like best friend. You know what I mean? Where it's like the three of them were all trying to be equal best friends, but that's not going to happen.
Girls are assholes, just in a nutshell.
Yeah, everything about this.
It's like cousins.
Yeah.
And I have a bunch of girl cousins, and I remember when we would get together for holidays that they would pair off. And that
same
would
with my family.
Infuriate
yeah.
us.
Similar to that. Like there's girls you like more than
it's or just, that you have more in common with or that you click with better or
so it's just 16-year-olds being 16-year-olds, you know? I mean, it is what it is. So Skylar and Sheila were fighting a lot, and unbeknownst to Skylar, Rachel would be listening in on their fights on a three-way call, which is awful. There was a lot of mean girl stuff going on. And the thing that gets me is they were friends. These weren't enemies. Because I know a lot of stuff like that happens in high school. It's like you're all friends and you have one. They're basically making her the middle of the joke. And she didn't even know she was in on it. They were obviously going through a lot of stuff, but they were still hanging out together. And I do remember fighting with my best friends and making up constantly over silly stuff. So I get that part where it's like you say something stupid, you apologize the next day. You fight hard and you get over stuff hard when you're a teenager. Your frontal lobe has not developed yet.
Well.
Anyway, late in the night on July 6th of 2012, Skylar snuck out of her bedroom window to meet up with Sheila and Rachel. They were going to smoke weed together across the Pennsylvania state border. They've done this before, so nothing new. Skylar was on the fence about meeting up with them, though, since they weren't in the best place. But after some calls and texts between the girls, she changed her mind and decided to meet up with them and go out. Well, the next day, Skylar did not show up for work at Wendy's, which was a first. She always went to work, so her parents knew something was wrong. They also knew that she didn't run away because her cell phone charger, toothbrush, and toiletries were all still in her room. They're like, if she's going to sneak out and run away, she's going to take her stuff. She had her phone, but she's not going to leave all this behind.
Right.
So they reported her missing. So Skylar's parents thought she snuck out because the screen on her window was missing, but they didn't realize where she was going or what she was doing until Sheila called them later that day and told them about it. Sheila said that she and Rachel picked Skylar up at 11 p.m. that night, and they dropped Skylar off at the end of the road to her apartment that night because they didn't want her parents to hear the car, see them, yada yada. So they said they dropped her off at the end of the road and she walked back. And she said they were back before midnight. So the niece family had cameras outside of the apartments, so the police were able to review it. It was dark, so the footage was grainy. But around 12:30 a.m., the footage showed Skylar leaving her apartment and getting in a four-door sedan. The car drove away just 5 minutes later and never returned. So at this point, they know Sheila's timeline's wrong. She said they picked her up around 11 p.m. and returned before midnight. Skylar didn't even leave until 12:30 a.m.
Wow. Which,
yeah. The day after her disappearance, Skylar and her mom helped canvass the neighborhood for Skylar. Rachel wasn't there to help, though, because that day she had to leave to attend a Catholic summer camp for 2 weeks. An Amber Alert was not immediately issued because the law enforcement authorities considered her to be a runaway. I know.
That shit pisses me off.
Even though her parents were convinced this wasn't the case, there was nothing they could do about this. Then they received a tip that she had been spotted in North Carolina. But when police looked into it, it was determined that the person spotted was not actually Skylar. So in the meantime, the nieces are posting flyers everywhere in the area in hopes that someone would know something or maybe they had seen her. After no luck, the West Virginia State Police and then the FBI joined the search for Skylar. And since the police weren't getting anywhere, they decided to just keep interviewing Skylar's friends. And social media also gave them some clues. Skylar had tweeted the afternoon before she disappeared, quote, "Sick of being at fucking home. Thanks, friends. Love hanging out with you all, too." Ugh. The day before she posted, "You doing shit like that is why I can never completely trust you." So just the day before she hung out with them, it sounds bad. A state trooper assigned to the case named Chris Berry thought there was something fishy going on with the girls the whole time. So he created a fake online account as a cute teenage boy who went to West Virginia University in Morgantown. So he was trying to catfish people, basically. Then he added a bunch of people, including Sheila and Rachel, so it wouldn't look weird or suspicious. And he was kind of monitoring how they were online and like, because, you know, you have to be friends to right. see certain things. He noticed Sheila was pretty perky and upbeat and happy, even though her best friend was missing. But Rachel, on the other hand, had gone quiet online. And the weird thing was neither of them seemed upset about their best friend being missing.
I hate this so much.
So they were just – they were still posting stuff, but it was run-of-the-mill stuff. Mm-hmm. Nothing like – nothing about her, and they were posting photos together with them two. On November 5th, so now it's 4 months later, there was an odd post by Sheila that read, "No one on this earth can handle me and Rachel. If you think you can, you're wrong."
Girl, shut.
So it's like the officer's like, what in the world? And around this time, other people on social media started accusing them of the murder.
The friends.
The two girls,
The two girls. Well.
Mm-hmm. So Sheila and Rachel did have other friends. They were all pretty social. But over time, they were distancing themselves from everyone else. And then they were only around each other the months after Skylar went missing. On a hunch, authorities started looking at the surveillance footage from nearby businesses to see if they could see Sheila's car that same night, which is pretty smart.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out, That same car was at a nearby convenience store in Blackstone, West Virginia. So that's west of Star City, but Sheila and Rachel had both claimed they went east that night. So they're caught in a second lie. But they still needed more. On December 28, 2012, Rachel's parents called 911. They said, "I have an issue with a 16-year-old daughter of mine. I can't control her anymore. She's hitting us. She's screaming. She's running through the neighborhood." And in the background, they could hear Rachel crying. Then they heard her say, "Give me the phone. No, no, this is over. This is over."
What?
Yeah. And then her mom said, "My husband's trying to contain her. Please hurry." So they went to their house and authorities picked Rachel up and took her back to the station. Then she broke down and told them everything that happened the night Skylar went missing. She immediately blurted out that they stabbed Skylar. It's the first thing she said.
Oh my God.
And that she and Sheila had been planning on murdering her for at least a month prior.
How do you sit and plan to murder somebody? Like a whole plan. We hear this so often in these cases that we cover.
16-year-old girls.
It's like it never at one point when you're going to sleep at night do you think
we're actually going to kill a person?
This is messed up. Like,
I know.
This is not.
And it was so blasé. She said one day they were sitting in science class and they just decided they should kill her. Rachel was about to go to camp for 2 weeks, so they agreed the best time to do it was the day before she left. So conveniently, she could be away for 2 weeks. Well, on the night of July 6th, Rachel got a shovel from her dad's house, and Sheila took two knives from her mom's kitchen. They also took a change of clothes and cleaning supplies. They picked Skylar up around 12:30 a.m. And this was the middle of summer in West Virginia. Sheila and Rachel were both wearing hoodies to conceal the knives. It was extremely hot, but they didn't say that she caught on to them. But they did go to the woods just across the Pennsylvania state border and got out of the car to smoke some weed. They're walking away from the car, and Sheila and Rachel were like, "Oh, we forgot a lighter." So Skylar turned her back to them and was walking back to the car to get a lighter. At this point, Sheila and Rachel counted to three, then began stabbing Skylar as her back was turned to them.
Oh, my God.
16-year-old girls. She tried to fight back and escape, but she only made it a few feet. Skylar did manage to get Rachel's knife at one point and cut her ankle in an attempt to defend herself, but she couldn't overcome both of them. And
no.
They got, you know, they got the jump on her.
Already, yeah. Mm-hmm.
When she was dead, they planned on burying her, but they didn't realize how hard and rocky the ground was. So instead, they placed her body only a few steps from the road and covered her with branches, dirt, and rocks. Awful. The only explanation ever given was just that they didn't like her anymore and didn't want to be her friend anymore.
So you want to kill her?
Yeah.
Murder her.
Isn't that absurdity?
Stab her.
They just didn't like her anymore.
Oh, God.
You don't kill someone because you don't like them anymore.
Mm-mm.
In early January of 2013, Rachel took investigators to the woods where they killed Skylar. But at this point, it was covered in snow and she couldn't remember exactly where it was. They weren't able to find the body, but since Rachel confessed, they could charge her at that point with murder. A week later, they found Skylar's body in the woods, and it was nearly unidentifiable. It took until March 13th for the lab to confirm it was, in fact, Skylar Niece. And investigators were also able to match blood samples in Sheila's trunk to Skylar's DNA, and she was arrested on May 1st in the parking lot of a Cracker Barrel. Other students overheard conversations between Sheila and Rachel talking about killing Skylar, but no one reported it because they just assumed they were joking. You don't think people are actually going to kill, I don't know.
No.
You hear people, "Oh, I'm going to kill her."
If you took me serious, Lacey, every time I said, "I'm going to kill them."
Yeah.
I would be in jail 50 times already.
So Sheila was charged with first degree murder. And she pleaded guilty in January of 2014. She received a life sentence with possibility of parole after just 15 years. She expressed no remorse at all during the trial. Yeah, so she could be paroled when she's just 31.
That's young.
Mm-hmm. Rachel pleaded guilty to second-degree murder and received a 30-year sentence with possibility of parole after just 10 years. Rachel did express remorse and apologized to Skylar's parents, her own family, and God during her sentencing. Her family also issued a public apology for her actions through their lawyer. I could not imagine being this girl's parents at this point.
No. What do you do?
That's like awful. So they're currently both in their 20s, and they're incarcerated at the Lakin Correctional Center in Mason County. And like I said earlier, an Amber Alert was not issued for Skylar because she technically did not meet all of the criteria. So a West Virginia state legislator, with the help of Skylar's family, introduced a bill called Skylar's Law to modify West Virginia's Amber Alert plan. So this makes it to where they can issue immediate public announcements when any child is reported missing and in danger, regardless of whether the child is believed to have been kidnapped or not.
Right.
Like, they're a child, they're missing, freaking do an Amber Alert. David Neese, Skylar's dad, occasionally visits a tree in the woods that is decorated in photos of Skylar. He said, quote, "I wanted to take the horrible thing that happened here and turn it into something good. A place that people can come and remember Skylar and remember the good little girl that she was and not the little beast that they treated her like." There's an episode of See No Evil on ID about this case. And then there's a Dateline episode called Something Wicked. I got a lot of my info from an All That's Interesting article by William DeLong, CBS News, and InvestigationDiscovery.com. But a lot of articles call them like the Heathers, the Heather killings.
I've seen that.
You know?
I've seen them called that, yeah.
But freaking terrible.
I have a kid, and I can't imagine him being that way towards another child.
It's dark. I had issues in high school with girls and all that kind of stuff, but not once in my head did I think I wanted to kill someone else.
No.
Or that I thought they wanted to kill me. Mm-mm. You know what I mean? That's so – that would not have even crossed my mind that murder was on the table.
No. Well, because we're normal. You can't be normal and have thoughts of planning a friend's
just
murder.
Over science class. It's just so dark to me. I don't know.
And they'll grow. I mean, they're grown now.
They'll
get out in their 30s and marry and have
life.
Kids. And it's like it never happened.
Yeah.
It's like just a blip in their whole life. And
it's so sad. They just didn't like her anymore. Didn't want to be her friend.
Okay, well, then just don't talk to her.
Don't sit by her anymore.
Yeah,
good Lord.
Away.
Anyway.
What else is going on?
Nothing. No new patrons this week because, well, we're recording earlier than usual because of the holiday. So we're just going to pretend that's why.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's going on?
Not nothing. Look at that double negative.
Not nothing. Talking about West Virginia, we're more Southern
I'll be damned. I put my Christmas tree up.
Me too.
Binged Designing Women, and I forgot how damn funny that show is.
Oh, it was good.
And it, almost every episode, what today would be very controversial. They talk about everything. Homosexuality, breast cancer awareness. I mean,
really?
Divorce.
And it was
in the 80s.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Being an independent woman, being, you know, it's a lot of it I feel like wouldn't fly these days, some of the things they say, but they were
very progressive. Interesting.
And the house is just right around Lacey's.
Yes.
Right around the corner from Lacey's.
Yeah. The Designing Women house. I've never been in it. I walk by it.
Well,
the basement
inside,
looks creepy.
The inside
it's different. It was
filmed in California, but the outside was. They talk a lot about Arkansas and
What's her name was from Poplar Bluff, Missouri. I remember
Charlene.
That. Not in real life, but yeah.
I was talking
Charlene.
To another friend of ours this weekend when I was driving up to Mountain Home, and I was telling him, I binged Designing Women, and I said, you're Julia Sugarbaker, Tim. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He said, who's Charlene? I said, Jason. Hands down, Jason.
I need to watch. Where were you watching that?
On Hulu.
It's on Hulu. Yeah, I'm going to need to watch
it.
It's
so good. It's so funny. I forgot how good it was.
Because the Golden Girls is so good, too. But I feel like the Designing Women always takes a back seat to the Golden Girls. Yeah. But
Designing Women is good. Many more episodes of Golden Girls than
that's true.
Designing Women
I used to watch that with my great-grandma all the time. And Golden Girls, but Designing Women, too.
So good. So I did that.
Nice.
And put my Christmas tree up and went and visited an old friend. And I hung out in Lacey's old stomping grounds.
Mm-hmm. I'll be there this coming weekend.
And I had a good time.
Well, that's nice.
I was texting Lacey the whole time I was there going, have you ever been here? Have you ever heard of this place? She's like, no. Yes.
It wasn't like that when I was a youth. Okay.
When I was a youth.
Don't be making it sound cool.
Other than that, I started Christmas shopping. 'Tis the season. We need to figure out when our Friendsgiving is and how we're going to do names. Last year, we had this great idea. We were going to draw names. And then I feel like every single person just bought shit for every single person.
I forgot we drew names.
We did. We drew names, but then every person bought a gift for every person.
Yeah, so it was like, was that me?
What was that?
My phone. Oopsie.
Oh.
But yeah, we need to plan that. It's so much stuff's going on. Oh my gosh. It's busy season.
It is. But I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. I have no plans for Thanksgiving. This will come out after that. But we're going on our annual turkey trot.
We're doing a turkey trot after this. Well, before this airs. But yeah, we're trotting it
Wednesday,
like it's hot.
Wednesday night turkey
Little
trot.
Little Rock, watch out.
Little
we're
Rock
trotting.
And then I'll sleep all day Thursday and
nice.
Eat SpaghettiOs and have no family to hang out with, which
or
I'm
debate.
Not mad about.
No.
Which I'm not mad about. So. And you're going home?
Yep.
What's new with you? Nothing? Your eye's not black?
My eye? No.
Is your wart falling off?
No, I still have it.
Still
and I've
have
paid my money. I'm
These
like,
motherfuckers are never leaving our bodies.
I'm like, I've paid for 2 wart treatments, and I've had to drive all the way to West Little Rock.
You might as well get a hotel room
if
you drive there.
Which is not that far, really. I know people in small towns are like, they have to go that far to go to Walmart, but I'm like,
that's a long. You get
like
used to everything.
17 minutes. I can't just scoot there.
That's
if I can't scoot there or walk there, I'm like, oh my god, what is this place?
Uh-uh.
I'm gonna have to go back, I think, for a third treatment. I've gotten a lot of messages about people that have also had to do this
with the Beetlejuice.
Yeah, Beetlejuice. Jeez.
Whatever.
I'm gonna see Beetlejuice on Broadway in
Lacey
New York,
and some other friends of ours are all going to New York.
You still need to go.
I know.
I'm gonna peer pressure you.
I know, and it's my birthday. And you are nobody's going
to
be here.
Well, you need to come with us. That's why.
I know.
See Beetlejuice with my Beetlefoot.
It's just, it's the mom guilt. It's Christmas and going without my kiddo. You're like, I do
hashtag
not
a mom.
It.
I don't get it, but I get it.
You wouldn't leave Sam.
Oh, to go to New York?
She's like, the.
I'd be on the plane.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
All right. Where are we next?
Next we are in, I just. Pulled this out so I could see it, and now I can't.
Because I don't remember anymore.
Oh my god, am I blind?
It's dark.
Rhode Island.
Did we?
No, we haven't done.
We haven't done Rhode Island yet. This season?
That was the one we ended on last year, last season. I almost said semester.
Oh, you're right. I'm like, why is that fresh in my head?
Yeah, because it was the one we ended on.
Okay,
we're in Rhode Island. Island. It's kind of like island.
Yeah.
I'm cold and delusional. That's it. There's nothing going on for me. We hope y'all have a happy Thanksgiving with your family or your family, whoever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody has like their back home stories. Like I was talking to some other moms in Max's Little, and they were talking about their own, like, version of their turkey trot. Like, they'll go back home, and other friends from, like, high school and stuff will come into town, and they'll, like, all go to the local bar.
Oh,
and I'm like, that would be fun. I think that would be fun. Mm-hmm. I got to hang out with you. yoo-hoos. Same ones I hung out with last weekend.
Same old, same old.
But you It'll know what? That, you know what else that means? Fresh meat, because there are going to be dudes coming into Little Rock.
They're here for the holidays.
Hey.
Oh my God. All right. Bye.
Bye.